Yeah, I'm Paul Fujitani. I'm with the Bureau of Reclamation. I work in the Central Valley Operations Office. So our office has responsibility of doing the planning and operation of the Central Valley Project, and means that we evaluate all the conditions, make the gate changes, control the flows, pump out of the delta, all that type of thing. I like this photo there. That's, I don't know if you recognize it, that's January 1997. I kind of look at that once in a while, give me kind of chill up my spine. Now, I was in operations at that time too, and that was quite an event. Exciting but challenging. Maybe I don't need that. Okay, what I was going to do is try to give you just a non-technical kind of presentation of advances that I've seen in operations and forecasting since 86. Kind of give you just a brief overview of the Central Valley Project, what it is, what we do, and then some of the improvements and changes that we've seen. I think one of the more significant ones has been the co-location we have with the other forecasters and operators in the state, different projects and tools that we utilize, and then some of the impacts that it has on our CVP operations and maybe some future of what I see maybe occurring in the next few years, coming years. Then finally, some of the challenges that I see are out there for from an operator's point of view and from my perspective. I'm going to rip through these pretty quick here on the California water stuff, but generally three major types of water projects in the state. We have the federal Central Valley Project, the state water project, state of California, and numerous local water districts. If you're, I think most people here in the state realize that just about every, practically every major stream in California has a dam on it. And I'm sure all of those operators are relying on weather forecasts and runoff forecast. Just a quick summary of the CVP. 20 dams and reservoirs, miles of canals, and large part of the state's developed water supply. Those are the major reservoirs that we operate in the Central Valley Project. All the way from the Trinity Reservoir, about 2.5 million acre feet up north, Shasta Reservoir, 4.5 million acre feet, down to Folsom, New Malos, and Front along the central Sierra Nevada. And then we have the San Luis Reservoir, which is jointly owned and operated with the state of California, roughly sharing that 50-50. Most of those reservoirs, in fact, this was one of the years we did fill all of them this year. And they're all full just about the same time. I thought we were real close there to getting one of the historical max storage in the CVP, but fell just a little bit short of it. It was like 11, just over 11 million acre feet we had. And I think we have topped off all of them now. I think they're all, yeah, even Frank's trying to work its way down. Right, Kevin?
Yep.
This is just a quick schematic to show how we work the water through our way through the system. Generally, we run water down the, capture water on the Trinity River, bring it across through Spring Creek and Carr Power Plants to Whiskeytown and over to the Central Valley watershed. And in Shasta and Folsom, we're releasing water to the Sacramento River for conveyance to the Delta. And from the Delta, we're pumping water through a Tracy pumping plant for delivery in the San Joaquin Valley and deliveries from the Delta Mendota Canal and the San Luis Canal. San Luis Reservoir is off-stream storage, pump storage unit here. That's the one that's operated with the state of California. And Orville shown there, that's a state water project. That's not ours, but we do coordinate very closely with them. We operate the CVP for these general project purposes. And oftentimes these are conflicting in nature too. Water supply, we have water supply that we try to fill the reservoirs and capture flow for agriculture uses. That's our primary purpose. Then we have M&I uses, as well as water that we store for refuge and water for the fishery purposes. That oftentimes conflicts with flood control. With flood control, we like to have a nice empty reservoir to capture the wintertime runoff, well, capture it, regulate the wintertime runoff. And environmental requirements, we have numerous environmental requirements for us, minimum in-stream flow requirements, temperature requirements for the fishery, and delta outflow and water quality requirements. We have power generation at all of our major dams. The power is used by our project power customers, and it also is used to pump water at Tracy and the other pumping plants that we have. And we also have to consider recreation in our reservoirs and downstream of the reservoirs. Generally, we like to use three types of forecasts in our operations. Now, we normally use the shorter range forecasts for weather, the weather streamflow and tidal forecasts for real-time type of operations. And these are typically used for the flood control operations, for delta water quality, and in-stream requirements that we have for temperatures and flows. We have temperature requirements on the Shasta, Sacramento River and American River for the salmon and salmonid populations. They're trying to keep it 56 degrees or lower if we can. The middle range forecast, I'm thinking of mid-range as anywhere from maybe a 3 to 5 day type of forecast. We use these forecasts that we get from the state and the National Weather Service for really planning a lot of our delta needs, planning in-stream flow considerations, and for reservoir fill management. We use these quite a bit during the springtime where we're trying to determine how much water release as we're gradually filling and topping off the reservoirs. Also use it for a lot of our water accounting that we do, water accounting for the state and water accounting that we have with some of our environmental purposes. By the long range forecast, for those I'm referring to forecasts of maybe 1 month to 12 months up to a year out in advance. And these are the type of forecasts that we use to project our seasonal type of operations and planning, looking at our target carryover storages, try to plan what kind of releases we have through the summertime, as well as determine our water allocations to our water users. Now on to some of the other improvements and changes I've seen. I think one of the more significant changes that we've had for the Bureau of Reclamation anyway has been the co-location of with the Bureau of Reclamation with the other operational facilities. I think, well, prior to 1995, Central Valley Operations Office, that's where I work, that controls the CVP, we were located in the regional office on Cottage Way, whereas we had the Department of Water Resources and the River Forecast Center, National Weather Service, all located in the Resources Building downtown. So at that time, the way we handled things, we had a meteorologist on staff, and I think around 1986, I think that was Pete Barrett, if I remember right. I didn't start working in CBO until 89, so I missed the 86 floods. But we had one meteorologist on staff, and that meteorologist basically served as liaison between our office and the Weather Service and River Forecast Center people. So he went down there each morning, took in the weather briefings, and shuttled information back to the operators. So we're really getting kind of his interpretation of events coming up, his view of the weather briefings and the data that was presented there, and of the upcoming events. Now, since we co-located with the other operators in 1995 in the Joint Operations Center, and now we have, you know, I like to think of we have all these coordinated briefings, daily briefings during the rainy season. We get the input of numerous meteorologists and hydrologists there. And I like to think that we have unlimited access to the River Forecast Center people. And I don't know, we're probably down there pestering Mike Eckert and others quite a bit during the flood season. But it adds a lot, and we're able just to run downstairs, check with them, check on how they're seeing the different events unfolding. It adds a lot to our confidence and our ability to try to operate the reservoirs. Something else that we get from that, too, the weather briefings, we have most of our reservoir operators down there attending these weather briefings. And for me, anyway, it helps to get the personal view and the presentation by the meteorologist and the hydrologist. They're often referring to different models and forecasts, and you're not getting just a single view or a single interpretation. And to me, it kind of gives you a broad range, but you get a sense and a feel of their confidence they have in events coming up. And that adds a lot to our operations. Something else that might have occurred in spite of the co-location too is CDEC is, and the internet has just added a lot to operations, just the exchange of information. But with the co-location, we basically have a direct line to the CDEC office. And I don't know if, I'm sure most of you have logged on to CDEC during any major event and realized the time it takes and how bogged down it gets. There's other ways you can work around that when you work with the CDEC people. But when we have the direct line, it sure is easy. You just call things up and you get instant response and data right there. Well, I was talking about the exchange of information that we had with the river forecast. It's not on all one way, I hope, anyway. We do provide the River Forecast Center with as much information we can and what our plans are for our releases from reservoirs. So they can take a look at our projected releases and work that into their downstream river flows and their forecasts. Someone mentioned the, I think the internet too, and maybe during Joe's talk, but we get all types of information from CDEC and the internet, and the public gets all types of information now too. They have ready access to just about anything going on in the state on flows and precip. And I think that has added greatly to the safety of the public, just where they can view immediately what's going on, provided they can get on CDEC and get on logged on and it's not bogged down. Some of the products and tools that I've noticed from the early 80s, mid 80s, I went back and took a look at some of the studies and things that were done during the 86 flood, February 86 floods. And I went back and I looked at it. That SAC bulletin, it's still the Sacramento bulletin. The QPFs are still a QPS, basically in the same table formats. I think probably a lot of you work with them. Although the QPS, there's more focused on probably a three-day type of a forecast. Now it's probably broadened out to more of a five-day forecast. There was a zonal weather forecast then. We have a zonal weather forecast now. But when you look at it a little more closely, you notice that the basins are really broken out in a lot finer detail. They're smaller basins, and it's, you get a little bit more information from that. I was saying a three-day forecast, now we can probably get five-day forecasts with a fair level of certainty. And we also get information as far out as 10 days now. One other thing that we are seeing is we get products from the Weather Service on impaired inflows to the reservoirs. I think we're kind of working towards that. We're getting information from them for Folsom now for impaired inflow to the reservoir, and that's what we really need in our reservoir operations. It seemed, too, that back in 86, there were maybe just a few times, maybe a couple times during the day when those six-hourly QPS were updated. Working with the Weather Service now, we can get those inflows updated numerous times during the day if necessary. Plus, we also have the ability, as we're watching the rainfall events unfold, to, like I said, run downstairs and check with those guys and see what their interpretation is of the data and see how we're tracking. The other thing we are seeing now, too, is we're getting a lot more climate data. By climate data, I'm talking more long-range type of forecasts, the El Nino type of events. We haven't been able to, or haven't really used that in our operations to a great extent, but something like El Nino, if we know or have an inkling that it might be a little wetter, that might lead us to operate our reservoir slightly different. Our mission is still basically a water supply system, but knowing it's a little wetter, we may think a little bit differently on how low we're going to bring the reservoirs or how much we may want to dedicate to some in-stream flows during the wintertime period. So it's something else that we consider as we're going through our operations. Satellite real-time radar information, that kind of goes back to the internet, just the amount and type of information we get now. Back in 86, as the events unfolded there, I think the engineers were looking more at basically point data of precip at various stations, trying to evaluate what was occurring. We still have most of those stations right now, But it makes a big difference when you can pull up and jump on the internet and see a picture there, a radar image or satellite image, seeing that stream of clouds or redness working towards your reservoir or some system. It's like they say, a picture's worth a thousand words. It really adds to your knowledge of what's occurring. And kind of like what Joe was kind of touching on there a little bit, when I looked at some of the reservoir routings, they still had the date there. They had the reservoir stage, calculated inflow, calculated releases. But a big difference, it was all done in pencil on a little spreadsheet paper. So basically you had the engineers or hydrologists or hydrotechs going through and running through the routings, hand calculating them. I think what they were using was just a regular desk calculator, the four-function desk calculator, but going through that manually. As compared to now when we're using these spreadsheets, Excel spreadsheets and PCs, and in many cases we're getting information directly from the weather service, uploaded right into our routing spreadsheets and get our output just like that. So it's easy for us to do multiple scenarios, different types of runs. We can pull up historical events that we think might be similar, run it through and see if it reacts similarly. Now overall, you know, it's really hard to discern what the actual impacts have been to operations. You can't really get that base case and say, well, it's improved water supply by 1,000 acre feet or saved so many more fish or generated so much power. But I know the benefits are there. And I think a lot of it's due just to the, the confidence we have and the ability we have in to forecast out more than a day or two, and the confidence we have that something, if we see an event on the horizon has been pushed out a little further now, but seeing the event out there, that some confidence that something will occur. I think it's more rare now that if something's forecast that nothing does occur. If there's an event out there, most likely we're gonna get some sort of precip out of it. Oh, okay, we gotta move along then. All of that, I think, leads to improved water supply, improved generation as far as we're able to schedule our releases to minimize the spilling of or exceeding of power plant capacities. It helps minimize flow fluctuations. If we can reduce our peak releases, it helps the in-stream fishery flows. It minimizes stranding, isolations, dewatering of reds, the salmon spawning beds and things, and high flow impacts. Just a couple of shots here of what we were dealing with back in 86. This is a kind of a day-by-day illustration of what was being forecast in 1986. And I don't know if it was the precip that they weren't picking up or the runoff. I didn't go back and check that far. But you can see, you know, a few days before the event, they really weren't picking up on the peak flow at all. This is from information I got that was being routed through our system that we were doing when they did the reservoir routings. But even just a couple days before, they really weren't picking up on the peak inflows. Now compare that to 1997, and I don't know what all goes into the forecasting, if this was maybe an easier event to forecast. But you can see almost 5 days ahead of time, this is on the 28th, as you know, the peak was the 31st or 1st of January. They had that basic shape and a magnitude of the storm. Actually, that's pretty close. I think it was pretty close. And I don't know if there's even much improvement as you worked through and got closer in. But it's that type of information, I think, that's given us more confidence in the material and the information that we're getting from the Weather Service. Want to go through, again, it was very difficult to see what the impacts might have been for these improvements, but this is just a snapshot of some reservoir operations in early 1980, kind of wetter year type. You can see the pink is the inflow and the blue is the river release. Normally, this is with Folsom and a lot of the other reservoir flood control operations. Once we're encroached, a lot of the flood control operations say match inflow. So in this case, did a pretty good job. Picked up and matched inflow. And out here, quite a bit of fluctuation as we came in and out of encroachment. kind of a similar situation in 1982. They did shave it off a little bit, probably just as we were getting encroached. But a lot of fluctuations out in here. As you get into the more recent years, this is 2002. Now, we didn't get encroached until out in the springtime. Right about in here, we got encroached into the reservoir, in Folsom Reservoir. But I don't think we had that same level of anxiety as being encroached, knowing we had maybe a clear forecast out of there or nothing on the horizon, you know, 5 or 10 days out. We don't have that monster storm sitting out there. So we're a little bit more conservative on releasing. Didn't have, I don't believe, as many peaks. We really tried to minimize the fluctuations. That could add to some fishery benefits and water supply benefits. A similar type of situation can be seen in 2003. This is a wetter year, so wetter year we might be a little more liberal with how we release too, but even so, you don't really see as many fluctuations, I don't believe, in our releases. Just on the flip side here, on the forecasting, in Trinity this year, Trinity Basin is up in the northwestern part of California, and I think it's the modelings are having a tougher time dealing with the unseasonable weather we had up north. Unseasonable, not really a typical type of event. And you can see the models were having a difficult time picking up the storms, unseasonable storms, and the runoff. They kept trying to pull down a shore recession. That never did really occur. Even over here, going into some of the major runoff, really wasn't picking it up too well. And there was a really abnormally high snowpack too. So it's that kind of operation, I guess, gives me some comfort that they can't do away with us operators yet. You can't just automate everything. They still need us to try to operate and interpret the data. Now, this is from this spring, last spring. We're going to see more and more use of forecasted inflow, I think, in flood control diagrams and flood events. Not just forecasting maybe a few hours ahead, it could expand further to maybe a day ahead forecast or maybe even a few days ahead. You probably see that cranked into the forecast more. We're trying to use more ensemble forecasting where we get multiple scenarios run off on multiple types of inflow and reservoir operations. And we use more detailed pre-strip runoff estimates. Of course, that all leads to more scenarios to run. And something that occurs to me too, as we get the ability to forecast further and further out into the future, at some point in time, are we going to get to the point where we have a high level of confidence of maybe a major storm coming in 10 days in advance? That'll kind of leave us with 10 days or a week to sit there and wring our hands and worry about this big event that's coming about to hit us. And I don't know how we're going to handle the public and all the other things, notifications too, but something else to think about. Maybe I'll have to pack up and leave in that time. I'm not sure. This is just an example of some of the ensemble forecasts that are being looked at now. And this is being done by the, let me get the name right. We're working with them. That's it, Hydrologic Research Center and the Georgia Water Resource Institute. But they're kind of investigating use of these ensemble type of forecasts. On the top, this is just a sample of numerous traces of a Shasta reservoir inflow and some resultant reservoir operations. And I can't remember if that was storage or release. Oh, it's inflow. Inflow's the top one. The bottom, I think, was storage. Release? I messed up here. Okay. Sorry, you're right. Well, what this is using was more historical type of inflows here, and then those are the resultant storage. The difficulty we have in our operations with this type of ensemble is that we're operating a multi-reservoir integrated system. And as you add more and more reservoirs, the operations gets more and more complex. With our operations, wetter does not always mean more water supply. And in fact, we've had we've had actually a low amount of water supply with a higher or a wetter season just because of the different regulations we have and commitments. So this, an ensemble type of forecast could be very beneficial, but we have to learn how to utilize that in an integrated system. Some of the challenges I see here is we're operating out on the fringes of planning and out there in the theory. I think that, you know, you talk to a lot of the forecasters and they maybe have a lot of confidence there. But I kind of wonder, you know, these are events that have never occurred before. Do we have confidence things can unfold this way? We're going to have flow going down the rivers that haven't been experienced. Probably equipment that will be operating at the design limits and capacity sometimes. Are they going to react as predicted and as designed? Just for example, actually river stages too. Maybe at some high river stages that probably haven't been seen in years or maybe never seen. The operators will be operating under conditions they haven't experienced. A kind of example I'm thinking of is at Trinity. We were basically had a chance to test out the maximum release capability at Trinity Dam this past spring. And just stepping it up, we got in a situation where we were actually releasing more than what we had thought, or we had really wanted to, because in the control system, the flow relationship kind of ended at a more typical kind of flow rate. So we tried to step the flow and it was going beyond what the control system was designed for. The downstream gauge wasn't set up for that kind of flow rate either. It hadn't been recently calibrated. So it was a mismatch there. Luckily we caught it and we brought things down. We didn't exceed it by very much. But things like that made me think, when we get these extreme events, we're out there or beyond some of these ranges. How will things react? And also, as you get to these flows, we're stepping up to these high flows in the Trinity River, and they occurred damages to some structures and things that they thought would hold up. So we're out there. I think my plea, or from the operator's point of view, is to keep things simple in a lot of the flood control diagrams and operations. When I look at, it's nice to take advantage of all the technology, but I think there's something to be said for an operator who may be sitting out on a dam, knowing that you can always have power failures, communication failures, or something always seems to happen, I don't know. But there's something to be said with a flood control diagram that can be operated just based purely on some calculated change in storage, change in stage, reservoir levels, and something that's easy just to put together and interpret, and you can do quickly and efficiently and make a decision and make a change. There are other situations I've heard where we've had operators trying to make changes on a release out of a facility, and it took so long to get the change implemented, by the time they got the flow done, they found out they're already behind the curve and had to make another change, or maybe even step up a couple of them. So my thought is, when we get these diagrams as they're developed more and more, keep that in consideration and how these things can be operated easily. Things that might have happened, hopefully not too broad, kind of narrow.